Welcome to the Underwater Podcast, where we take a deep dive into the world of underwater portrait photography, cinematography, and everything in between. With me, your host, Brett Stanley. Welcome back to the Underwater Podcast, and this week I'm chatting with actor Elaine Powell about her work as a mermaid on the now sadly cancelled show Siren. We talk about her training for the part, the intense days filming underwater, and how learning to move in the water really informed the actor's movements on land. She also talks about how the experience has changed her, and how she'd much rather be a mermaid than learn the violin. Alright, let's dive in. Elaine, welcome to the Underwater Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
How are you? Are you surviving in this kind of crazy COVID 2021?
Yeah, the surrealism, the surreal world. I am surviving. I'm actually doing very well considering I'm one of the lucky ones. I'm healthy. I have a roof over my head. I'm safe. So I love board games. So I keep myself busy.
That's really good.
I love cooking, all that stuff. So I'm
right.
Very fortunate.
That's amazing.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah. I mean, 2021 has kind of opened up a little strangely for me. I think we all kind of expected the new year to happen and then everything to go back to normal, but it's really not.
So. Looking back, you're like, why did we think that just because it's a new year, it would be different?
I know.
Do you know?
Yeah.
In hindsight, you're like, we were so hopeful. For what reason?
But I've been seeing all these kind of memes online where it's like, welcome to day 357 of March 2020. And I'm like, I know, it still feels like that.
No, or just January. My favorite meme was like 2021, hold my beer. Right. I just went down. But yeah, thank God for a bit of humor, eh? So
exactly.
We can get through it.
It's exactly, yep. So where are you at the moment? Where in the world? Are you in the UK or?
I'm in Europe. I'm staying with my family because when we saw lockdown was happening again, you know, after the first wave, we wanted to spend the second half of the year with a bit more space and greenery. So we've come to my parents' house, which is a bit bigger than
nice
little flat in London.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Like having space around you certainly makes the lockdown and the quarantine time a little.
Yeah, I think nature is kind of your friend through it. It keeps you grounded and makes you feel not as boxed in, you know.
Yeah.
Or just a park or anything like that. I kind of, when you get a bit claustrophobic, I feel like that kind of really soothes you. It soothes me anyway. I feel, okay. Yeah.
It does too. It does me too. It's kind of when kind of lockdown started, happened last year, and I was just thinking about people who were in like New York and these kind of high density cities living in apartments. And I'm like, oh my God, like, you know, I have a backyard and a swimming pool here. I'm very, very lucky. I can't imagine what it was like being in those dens.
Yeah. I think it's anybody who's close to that kind of who has access to any kind of, you know, sprinkle of nature, it's really beneficial, even if it's just to see, you know, life still goes on. Do you know what I mean? Like, I know there's tragedy everywhere, but I find psychologically it just really soothes me.
Yeah, it's like a healing kind of vibe. It's quite nice. So let's move away from the depressing 2021.
Yeah.
And let's head back a few years
let's dip in the water. Yeah.
Exactly. Let's go for a swim.
Yeah.
So let's talk about a show that has been, you know, quite important in this kind of industry, as well as really, I think it had a really good reception on for the viewers, and that's Siren.
Yes.
Give us a little overview for those who don't know what Siren is, what this show's about.
Well, this show was a mermaid show, but kind of first of its kind in the respect that they approached mermaids not so much as the Little Mermaid Disney versions that we might know, more the perspective of these are another aquatic humanoid species, predators really, living under the water and are finally meeting mankind for the first time. And, you know, in modern day, with all of its challenges, climate change or pollution. And my character is basically one of the first mermaids who comes on land to and comes in contact with humans and knows nothing, doesn't know how to speak the language or anything like that. And so basically we're getting to know both species through each other's eyes, through their respective eyes. It was a life-changing show for me. It's ended now, but it was for many reasons the best 4 years of my life. And one of the main reasons for that is because it got me in touch or brought me into contact with free diving and a whole underwater world that I wasn't really aware of, which is why I'm talking to you now, because I grew a passion for it. So yeah, it's worth checking out if you're into anything, if you're anything around that mythology, if that fascinates you. It's a nice new interpretation for it.
Yeah, and so it's quite gritty, isn't it? Like it's not, it's like the magical gritty kind of, yeah, you know, yeah, like you say, no, it's not that Disney sort of thing. It's very, yeah, it's a bit more like a drama, really.
Yeah, like we're not very, I mean, I don't mean that dismissively, but we're not like beautiful and, you know, perfect and lovely and nice. Yeah. We're more sort of, yeah, we're just very brand new, and we come from quite a world where you have to survive, and it's a bit more predatory and animalistic, and but at the same time, you know, they have a lot, the our mermaids anyway have a lot of intelligence and emotions in their way,
yeah,
which is very different from humans. So they get to know each other's worlds and what they find strange about that. And then, of course, the aim of the story, or I think anyway, the morale of it all is that you much more find a way, a common ground, if you're willing to look, if you're willing to love, if you're willing to be open, than if you're, you know, immediately putting up the enemy walls or the you are lesser than me and I take advantage of you perspective,
right,
which is very applicable for today's problems, I think.
Yeah, so yeah. So you mean like you bring in a bit of vulnerability in there is,
yeah, is I feel like, yeah, time and time again in our show, I mean, of course the thrill is finding out about this new, because it's a sci-fi, so you know, with, you know, scientific fantasy, and it's very, you know, there's not so much magic as there is, you know, the main characters are marine biologists, and some of the bigger voices in it are science or the military or doctors, or, you know, so they have their own theories about it. But then at the same time, there's spirituality and heart, because you're talking about another culture almost, yeah, another. And anyway, and those elements sort of play together. But then, of course, in the most magical setting, which is underwater, which hasn't been done before, at least not in a television show. I mean, you have H2O, which is a gorgeous show, but again, is more leaning towards the Little Mermaid interpretations of, you know, beautiful and lovely and smooth. And yeah, here the transformation is painful. You know, the way our mermaids change from water creatures to land creatures is very painful. We're actually talking about evolution in the space of, you know, a minute. You know, if you think about, yeah, birth, or if you think about, you know, any animal regrowing a limb or a tail, it doesn't happen sort of very
easily
with twinkly lights and you know, yeah, as like much as we'd wish that. Yeah, yeah. It's life is raw. Yeah. And that take is more the one that our show approached, which is cool. It's different.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that it's an interesting point too, because you talk about H2O, which is, I think, is an Australian mermaid kind of show. And I think there's a lot of kind of shows that are made for, I guess, kind of kids or teenagers, you know, with that mermaid sort of thing in mind. Whereas this it's a lot more adult, isn't it? I mean, there's nudity,
yeah, which I think there is, you know, I think there's such room for it. I mean, if you think of the fascination there's been, I mean, we love, as a whole, throughout history, we love mythologies. We love the power it has to tell stories about humanity through creatures. And then, of course, the other aspect is it was real or not. But let's just stick with the power of using myths and mythological characters. I mean, for instance, years ago, it was vampires. In every which way they were explored, from good to bad to the stereotypical to the new. Same, the popularity of zombies, werewolves. These fascinate us so much. And then I always found it so baffling. There's such scope for the underwater, the mermaid world, the sirens, the, you know, all that world that has so much potential. So I was so happy that there's a show like Siren who's at least throwing another idea on the, you know, on the plate there.
Well, I think the thing that really impressed me about the show was how much they tried to do in a practical sense. You know, a lot of these shows, if they do underwater scenes, they'll either do it, you know, dry for wet, which means shooting it dry and then making it look like it's wet.
Which doesn't work, really.
No, I mean, when it does work, it's so much money to make it work.
It's so much money to make it work. Yeah. I feel like, I've spent so many hours on the underwater set now. I mean, after all those years, and I 100% believe that the practical way is the best, as in the hands-on way, the really doing it way, delivers the best results. And yes, it's still expensive, but my God, the more you do it, and especially if you work with a great team, which we did in Siren, and every year we became closer and family. And it's like anything, right? You spend long time on it and you perfect and you find quicker ways and better ways and easier ways. Even if you look at our season one or our pilot sequences that we did for underwater, and then you compare it with our third season, you already see so much progress in them. That's because everybody was learning how to do it better. In my head, I always have a little, gosh, what we could have achieved now, because we know so much. We know each other. We know what we can do. The CGI guys, they really know how to work with us and all this stuff. But yeah, I would say for underwater things I've seen now, it's absolutely possible to do it practical, to actually shoot underwater. And all you need is top people. And communication and knowledge and all that stuff, which I'm not claiming I had at the beginning, but the team did and we got there, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that, I think that's the thing with this coming in, you know, there's a steep learning curve to it.
And all of that
just adds on to the beautiful production at the end of it, is knowing how much work went into it. Is the water something that you kind of grew up with? Is it something that you had a fascination with when you grew up, or was it just because of this production that you kind of found that love for it?
No, it was completely a love of mine. I was completely, you could say, water baby. But, you know, I didn't have access to a pool most of the year, except for in the summer. You know, the common story of it was done mostly in summer holidays or stuff like that. So I loved the water. I loved The Little Mermaid. But it wasn't something I was actively near, and therefore completely unaware how much it actually would, you know, burst my heart open with joy, as I found out then. When I got the job, I was just over the moon, because the prospect of learning this as a skill, being underwater, that was just fun for me. But I didn't think that much of it, other than, okay, it's sort of like learning a stunt. Like, it excites me, but okay, there it ends.
Yeah.
And then I had my first few sessions at the time in London still, before I moved to Vancouver for the pilot. And it was just in London with Liv Phillips, who was a competition free diver there. And she was marvelous. And so we did some breathing and I was like, okay, this is interesting and great. And then she put on that monofin. She brought her competition monofin for me to try out. And we went to the pool, and I could do the moves already a little bit, probably not well, but enough.
Yeah.
And that when I first took the monofin for a ride and did the whip and the speed with which I could go, and I still remember that feeling, like, what is this? This is immense. This is pure freedom. I felt sort of like, I'm going to give you a movie reference. You know, the guy in Avatar, when he tries his avatar for the first time, and it's the character is paralyzed from the legs down. Yep. And he has this avatar, and for the first time he can run again, which he thought he never would be able to do. And that scene, that's kind of the equivalent of what happened to me then in that pool. I was like, you know, finally you can just move, you can just go. Because, you know, when you swim just your body in water, I think unless you're like an Olympic swimmer or your underwater ballerina who just really knows her stuff, your body is not the best yet at really moving with water. So when I had that monofin on, I was like, my God. And I just felt like I just discovered fire. It was amazing. And then it just ignited. And then I went on this journey and it was brilliant.
I mean, that's such a beautiful analogy as well. Like, you know, that kind of having this avatar, because I know that feeling. And every time I get in the water, and especially with fins on, and you kind of give yourself that little flick and you feel how powerful you are and you feel the water rushing past you, it is such an amazing feeling.
It's absolutely incredible.
And then you take them off and you're back to your little feet again and you feel so helpless.
You're like, I'm pathetic. I deserve to be eaten by something big.
You know you're not the apex predator in this situation.
Yeah, it's so confronting. I very much have that actually today, where if I ever in a pool without a little monofin, I just feel like such a little shrimp. Like, oh God, what am I even doing? Useless.
I mean, that's the thing, because you've spent... So let's break down a typical kind of shoot for a water shoot for this, because you are in a monofin the whole time, right?
Yeah. So Siren was very much, I mean, I'm sure you've heard this from my fellow Dream Team colleagues who've been on your podcast, Roberta Senides and Braden Haggerty, who are my one's camera woman and underwater choreographer, teacher, free dive original mermaid extraordinaire. And so they were really almost like a second filming. So you had anything that we shot in the show on land, and then we had days in the tank days, and that's where we shot the underwater part of the show, which increasingly got more and more with each season. But in the beginning, you know, so it was a lot of training days, and then you had tank days, and tank days were, they were in tense, you know, like you're in the water, I think 12, 13 hours a day, and you're completely pruned out by the, by the end of it. But I mean, I can't express enough joy and bliss. I was always begging the writers and the producers, please, please, please put in more water stuff. Please keep as much as you can in the water. And they're like, that's great, Aileen. Do you have a couple of mil lying around? I was like, okay, fine. But so it would be, the process is much slower. So again, that's why in the beginning, there's not as many water scenes as towards season three, because, you know, I stress again, we got to know the process really well. We got to know the water, the actors, everybody just knew their stuff by season three. But in the first, the process is you go in, okay, the light setup, because, okay, you don't maybe have many props as such. You still had to, you know, set the scene. Is it nighttime? Is it daytime? Whereabouts in the water are they? Do we have any rocks? All that stuff. I was so ready, thanks to the loving care and amazing, amazing training that I and anybody else who was a mum on the show got from Roberta. And so I was fully prepped. I was like, I feel it. I'm in it. It's amazing. And then you go down in the tank, this really deep tank with black walls and a black floor. And I just didn't have a clue. Because even when you practice in pools, it's light, it's blue, you see at least a shape. Yeah. But in the darkness, it was, you know, they've put lights underneath in the pilot. I remember they put lights to, you know, light our face. So they were like, look at the light. So I was looking at the light, but that still wasn't the camera. And oh my God. And then, okay, finally they figured out to put lights on the camera, and then they put our markers on the floor with fluorescent colors. And then sort of vaguely, I was at least looking towards the right direction. And then it was okay, you're basically so close to the surface, you have to swim deeper. Anyway, it's a very different way of shooting. You have to be aware of depth, then roughly where the camera is. So your buoyancy needs to be spot on. You need to be completely fully aware of your own, you know, gravitas, how do you say, in the water. And then finally, when you manage to get all of that, you have to do the acting.
So, then you've got to do your job.
Yeah, which again is like, I was very happy to beforehand kind of practice on filming myself on my own, because again, that was a shock. So you go underwater in the pool and you're like, I feel it. I'm the spirit of this underwater creature and the animal. And then you see yourself back on the camera. You're like, my goodness, what happened there?
Like, what was that?
Well, basically, you know, because you're floating up. So what happens is your shoulders are coming up. You're still kind of learning to be relaxed, but you're still, the moment you're thinking of acting and there's a scene where you're angry or tense or just anything but in freediver mode, you tense up your face, and but you're holding your breath, so your cheeks blow out a bit, and mm-hmm. then you scrunch your eyes because there's chlorine. And so by the time I saw what was on like the first few takes, you look like a complete clown, a blowfish. I looked like blowfish rather than a mermaid. So there's a lot of work on like pull. It's not even relaxing. It's pushing the shoulders down. It's keeping the legs straight, so your knees aren't bent at 90 degrees for the tail. You know, it is. You have to be constantly aware. It's very much like a dancer's interpretation in the end to convey that you were a mermaid, because yes, the CGI guys changed the skin, but the posture, you had to think about all the time, almost like a dancer would, because the moment you just bead and relaxed, you were just gone. You were no longer really saying the same things. And it was dreadful. So you had to really focus on that. Anyway,
so you're saying it was a real conscious effort to keep yourself in that.
Yeah. It was. And this is all, I'm all talking about the start particularly, and the elements of like finding camera and finding light and acting at the same time, doing all that. And then, you know, thank God I absolutely adored the water, because if you then have any fear that you're, you know, in a 16-foot tank or something in the dark, you're fighting many, many elements. Yeah. Luckily, that was not one of mine. And also, I was very well trained already by that point, so I was quite relaxed about breath hold, but everything else was a challenge. And that's where I'd say an amazing camera team like we had on Siren just made it possible. You know, I was thinking about 5 million things, and I'll be honest, where the camera was kind of at the bottom of my list.
Yeah, so, survival was probably one of them.
Yeah, I was like, if I can hold my position, and if I can convey, you know, the scene, then I'm just hoping Brayden is magical and captures it. And she did.
Yeah.
She, you know, so in season one, it's mostly the camera team that I personally think that had to be really extraordinarily beyond to get it. And luckily, Brayden and Roberta and I mean, they're so great, but we got very close. So we started doing projects outside of Siren together. Like, we started doing some photo shoots, and we went actually free diving in Vancouver in the ocean a few times. And so we got to know each other, and she got to know my, you know, my duck dives, my breath holds, my the way I move, the what I do to get ready for the camera, to just pull my hair back and things like that. Yeah. And so by the time we were then back on scene doing water, it was so quick and easy. And then even by season two and three, we could really help out on how to help out with certain big scenes, because the scenes got more intense. And then everybody could really pitch in with how to shoot certain things, because we knew what was possible from one another, you know, especially with stunts, with fights, because everything was quite vicious underwater sometimes. Yeah. So we were like, how do we, you know, and then Brayden, we worked with wires and all that stuff. Anyway, so the initial, you know, the first dip in the water, let's say, is quite a shock, and it's very needed to have a good team around you, and it's quite slow, so you kind of vaguely block it, then we chewed it, and then really the main difference with on land is like on land, you're like, okay, that was a great take. Let's sort of perfect it. In the water, it's like, we have a take that works. Great. Let's move on.
Yeah.
You know, it takes so long sometimes to get the magic that if you even get it remotely close, we just had to move on to get the next bit.
Yeah, you're kind of your bar of not quality, but your bar of what's acceptable certainly lowers in the water, I think, because you're so just so happy to have got something because of how hard it is.
Especially in the beginning. I mean, towards the end, I was a bit, give me one more take, please. Right. And then, but basically, what happens is, so in the beginning, so these lights that they put everywhere, when you open your eyes underwater, everything kind of looks the same. The lights are blurred or elongated, and you don't know which one's starting where, which one's coming. Your orientation's just gone. And what I just noticed after a few hours, let alone after a few months, let alone after 3 years, is this weird thing that your brain suddenly clicks. And even after a few hours, the brain suddenly clicked, and you can actually see the shapes clearly, and you can actually see the camera a bit and the lights a bit. And I always found that so fascinating, as if your body took a bit of time, but then it saw, okay,
evolved,
we're underwater now.
Yeah.
And then it was crazy, like suddenly you could just, would you need me to pick up the penny on the bottom of the floor? No problem, just dive down and get it. You know, it was, the other mums experienced this too. Yeah, very, which was very helpful when in fights, because you don't want to hurt each other. But so that's why we put fights a bit toward later the day, so that the eyes had adapted a bit to the water.
I had heard that actually. I was speaking to someone yesterday who's a professional mermaid, and she was saying that over time she has evolved. Her brain has evolved to be able to sort of make more out of the shapes and the blurriness, and to be able to see more detail. So that it's really interesting that you're saying the same thing.
Yeah, it's so, I find it very fascinating. And then if I think about people like you, people like Roberta and Braden, who spend their lives in the water and dedicate their whole physical bodies and minds to it, how truly adapted they are, they become. And then, you know, there's some in Indonesia, I think, some cultures and tribes who really live like that, and their kids have evolved to really see well underwater. Some even don't have to wear goggles and things like that.
Yeah, right.
It always makes me feel really, gosh, imagine if, you know, just give us a few million years and see where we could end up, you know? Yeah.
Well, I think because there is such a resurgence, and not a resurgence, but maybe just a surge in the whole freediving community. There's a very massive, you know, mermaid industry right now. So I think the idea of spending longer times underwater, I think, is something that we're very interested in without having to use external equipment.
Yeah, I think I don't know. I feel like it's always represented the subconscious a bit. The water, it feels sort of mysterious and unexplored and unknown. And yet through documentaries and Blue Planet and stuff, we've seen a glimpse of it. The animals in water fascinate us. I mean, the blue whales and the orcas. I mean, they're these immense, immense creatures that really not the average person can even remotely really know what they're like. Or it's just the closest thing to really finding alien life on our own planet. It still holds so much mystery. So to think of being someone that can know its secrets and I don't know, be master of it, or at least be part of it, I think that really appeals to many people. I think it represents a sort of freedom, sort of, to many people, like flying is. But with flying, you'd be like, well, there's nothing in the sky.
Yeah, that's right.
I always think that. I'm like, but surely underwater there's so much more going on. Yeah.
Well, I kind of think of it like, you know, like the longer my breath hold gets, the more I feel like a superhuman person. Like I feel like it's a superpower.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like it's my body that's doing this amazing thing. And I'm sitting on the bottom of a pool, or I'm in 20 feet of water in the ocean, and I'm not scared. I'm not gasping for breath.
It's absolutely incredible. I have such respect. You know, how I mentioned one of the reasons the show has been life-changing for me is because of this discovered passion. And I'm by no means a free diver in terms of competition or anything like that. But I have gotten to know a community, and I have gotten glimpses of the power that you've just described. And that is something, you know, I find exhilarating. I basically, for my first exam, I did an ADA 1 and ADA 2 certificate. And for the first one, I did it with Roberta in Vancouver in the cold sea. But so just diving to 10 meters, just the first time.
Yeah.
And the immensity that felt. But then definitely with my second level, I was in Mexico, and the whole course and exam took place in this cenote that was like 40 meters deep or something, and ends in a, it's like a dead forest with a sulfur cloud kind of thing.
Oh yeah, like yeah. It looks like mist on the bottom.
Yeah,
of the
it's mad. It's like a Tim Burton dream.
Yeah, exactly.
But so I just had to go down to 22 meters, which for me is still the deepest I've ever been able to go, and I just never, I just didn't think I can do that. I can do it. And then the instructor said to me, "Okay, don't go to the bottom. If you know, just think of, do the most relaxing dive ever that you can possibly do, and then just come up." And so I did the breath hold and the breathe up, sorry. And I was just in the jungle, and I got to that moment, right? I'm sure as a freediver, you know, just the moment where you're like, I'm gone. And I went down, and yeah, it was like this weird thing where nothing was a problem. Everything was, I was in completely, for lack of a better word, the zone.
Yeah.
And I went all the way down to 22 meters, and I suddenly realized I'd reached the bottom thing, and I just felt so peaceful, and I just swam up, and I had the monofin, so it was like whip and bliss.
Yep.
And then I exactly experienced that. I was like, wow, here I am. I'm just, you know, I'm in a tiny thing, and I just went to 22 meters, and it was, I didn't even think about it. And my breath hold at for that particular dive was like 3 minutes something, which wow. For me, you know, static breath hold where you don't move, okay, but when it's moving and with a bit of pressure or a bit of like, ooh, then my breath hold obviously diminishes. So for me at the time, I was just blown away. So like I say, it's only a tiny like glimpse of what true freedivers experience, but it was enough for me to go, my God, what a power we have. Like what a power yeah. real freedivers have to actually be able to train the body to do these insane things, but really conquer a completely unknown piece of nature, like a world that really isn't, when you swim without monofins and it's just our little legs, it's really not meant for us in a way, but we conquer it nonetheless through dedication and passion and the mind. I think that's magical. That's really, and it's why it's a show. I mean, you know, the show also means friendships and all that stuff, but particularly for that knowledge, that experience, it'll be forever very, very dear to me.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this, the whole journey that you're talking about there is very, very special and very individual, you know, and it's very reaching that kind of serenity that you reach when you're at that depth. You know, it's really sort of seeing inside yourself, and I think you're changed by these experiences.
It really does something to you. I can see why. I mean, maybe not everyone, but I feel like once you're hooked, you're really hooked. You know?
Yeah. Oh, it's addictive. Really, absolutely.
It's addictive. It lures you in. Yeah.
I mean, I kind of get it when you're talking about, you know, it is kind of an extreme sport. You know, it's kind of like these people who like base jump or rock climb massive mountains with no ropes and stuff. You know, it is that sort of thing, but it seems a little safer to me because, you know, if I fall off the water, I'm not going to land on something.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just going to be, but it seems more achievable, but
it
at
seems
the same time,
more achievable, but it's definitely,
more
you're right. It is very, you know, I'm talking to the nines about this serenity, but let's be real, you need to be a serious badass
yeah.
to really conquer this. I mean, so my training instructor, Roberta, she's like, she helps for competition dives and things like that. And so she's like, oh yeah, so I swim down to 30 meters to weigh up for them or whatever, like casually
yeah, exactly.
swimming down to the, and then, you know, they usually pass out a bit. you know, near the shelves. But that's all right, because then you pass out and then you're near the top, you know, because she's seen it all. So she's a complete safety diver. So she talks about that really relaxed. And then she's like, competitions, yeah, you know, you're at the top and it's really wavy when you do your breath up. So, and we're waiting there. So we, you know, a lot of us have thrown up and like, you know, and then obviously she on top of everything, and Braden too, they're complete polar bears because they swim in Vancouver.
Which is
because there's, you know, there's like the awesome free dive community in the Bahamas and Australia. And, you know, that's cool. But my God, when you then go to the Vancouver, the Canadian, the ice cold freezing waters, that's a whole other level. And they go on this trip in February or something to like a nature free diver with seals and everything. And it's like snowstorm, ice, hail. And they're just like, we're going to go for a free dive thing. And then they're just, you know, okay, yeah, they have their good suits. But realistically, that ice, the water's like, you're talking really like 2 degrees or something. I'm sorry, I don't know that in your measurements, but it's just very freezing. Very freezing.
Yeah.
But they don't even think twice about it, and they just I think they're one of the most badass women I've ever met, I have to say. So that also appeals to me. Of course, I'm like, oh, I want to be part of that kind of a community for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I think women have a higher tolerance for pain than men do. And well, I mean, you guys give birth, you know,
like, yeah, of course,
there's a lot of things you need to deal with.
Yeah.
But I have spoken to a lot of people who come from colder climates and who dive and free dive there. And when they go to somewhere like the Red Sea or the Bahamas or whatever, they feel like they're not, I don't feel like they don't enjoy it as much because they don't feel like it's as exciting as it is when they're doing it in the cold.
Oh, interesting. You know? Oh, yeah. I'd love to. That's a good poll to ask people. Like, do you prefer where you were trained, kind of thing, or do you?
Yeah.
As in where the most of your dives take place, or do you get a special kick out of going through kind of a different temperature? And what's the difference in quality of dives? I'd love to know, because I do know that in the colder climates, obviously the visibility sometimes is really good when it's really cold.
Yeah, yeah.
And then in the summer, for instance, they've got a lot of, you know, bits and stuff flying around.
And all that sort of stuff.
Like, yeah. Like I said, when I just had to dive to the 10 meters one, but already by 2-3 meters, like, you just can't see your fins. Like, it's really...
It's murky.
Murky. But doing all those things, it's very valuable for us as all the actors that went on the show, because ultimately you have to imagine you're in a world where not many people have really been, you know?
Yeah.
Like, everything that informed the characters always originated in, well, what's it like for them underwater? And I mean, this was a collaborative process. I mean, maybe I began it, but it was definitely completely... All the mums were thinking about this collectively as the show went on, about our culture and movements and voices and all that stuff. But it always all started with the water. So when I sometimes say this too, that the training we had for those underwater things really informed so much of the rest of the acting and rest of the, like, the postures and the sounds and things actually came a lot from what we were able to do underwater. And how that then would translate to land. So, you know, for instance, like because we had the webbed hands. So on land, we kept our hands a bit more open because we weren't used to really closing it as such. And little things like that. Or the little exhales we did in the show on land, like hisses and stuff, came from... If there was any kind of thing you could take from it underwater, would be an exhale of air to, you know, a little bit the way dolphins and you know, anything like that. Air is part of the communication as well. And, you know, they play with bubbles and things like that. Anyway, so it was such a, and rightly so, cornerstone of everything that the show grew upon eventually, to all the swimming.
Yeah, exactly. So you've kind of, instead of informing the movements under the water from what you were doing on land, you were doing it the other way around.
Yeah,
you were learning from what you had experienced down there.
Yeah.
That's really cool. And so there was something you mentioned before as well, which was you were doing fight scenes under the water.
Yes, yes. So the two big physical scenes that, you know, the most difficult were fight scenes and mating scenes. We did one big bit about the mating season there.
Oh.
And so just to clarify, if there's scenes where it's mostly acting and swimming and something like that, they are fairly, I dare say, straightforward, because it was about, you know, just swimming. We could do that with our eyes closed, you know, little things like that. But when it became about intense movement or intense, like this fighting or mating, instantly our breath hold went down and we couldn't do as many takes as maybe we'd like to.
Yeah.
And then two, the choreography of that, especially in the beginning, was very difficult because, you know, you can't see each other that well. You are ultimately dealing with, we were wearing monofins, but in the show, our tails are they're elongated a little bit. So we wanted to do a lot of tail whips and everything. But so we had to stunt fight that, and still make it all hit right. But, you know, safety was kind of paramount. So we had to be very creative with that. And luckily, I don't know, I think sometimes passion overtakes the physical capabilities and you're just like, I don't need any air, I can keep going through it. But so for the first few fight scenes, they very much became, in the end, just scrap within safe measures. And luckily, because we, you know, when we fight in close proximity, so we're fighting holding each other by the arms or the shoulders, or then we can at least see each other fairly well, right? Because it gets worse the further away, the blurrier something becomes. So if we fight close together, then okay, we can do biting and things like that fairly, how do you say, safely. So the first few fight scenes were mostly like that. And then of course, thanks to our amazing stunt coordinator, Ed Anders, and a lot of super, super other talented people who pitched in, of course, we came up with other moves, like to put in key moments that would edit in, you know, that were shot separately. Like, I think in the pilot, it was like somebody, I think Rin swims into Ben like a headbutt almost. But the most of the fight scenes that you'll see, they are more scrapped. They're close together. They are with biting and stuff. And that was done because it was the way we could be free and really go for it and yet still be safe, because we could hold on to each other and we were together. Also because, you know, you're holding on to each other. I don't know if the person I'm fighting with, how their breath hold's doing, and you're acting, right? So you're acting in distress anyway. So it's very hard to even give a signal.
So what would you do in that situation? Was there a way that you could?
So it would be like it was the moment you stop and freeze. So the moment you
stop fighting,
stop, or the moment you even sense that someone wants to go up, unless it was choreographed, like now you come over me and tumble swim or something.
Yeah.
That was the sign to swim up and catch some air. What also really helped, and we got really good at that as the show went on, but in the beginning it was really struggling, is how much we, as an entire team, especially actors, relied on communication. So in the beginning, because we were blind as bats and that brain click that I'd mentioned hadn't quite happened yet. So on the speaker, you know, when they're like, and action, and that was great, and like a bit more, you're not in camera or something, which would be perfectly valid notes on land. But underwater, it sort of was like, well, this means nothing to me. So we learned to go, okay, the camera's rolling. Okay, lean, take your breath hold, go down. Okay, go a bit lower, a bit more to your left, set. So then we do like an okay sign or whatever, and then action. And then we know that everybody's ready. Then we do the scene. And especially because, you know, you never record the sound while we do these scenes. So they're able to direct it. And this, again, in the beginning wasn't there. And that was, it was why it was hard, because we were just sort of doing stuff and sometimes it wasn't even a shot. But then as the show got on, our directors and especially a producing director who would shoot a lot of it, Joe Menendez, he would really get that and go, okay, so during a take, even go, okay, swim lower. Okay, one more hit from, you know, Rin. Okay, Ben, go go underneath her, you know, and then they would really guide it, because we didn't realize that the blessing, the curse was also a blessing, right? So the fact that you can't record sound underneath was brilliant. So the directors could guide us and be our eyes, especially in those fight scenes where we didn't have it.
Yeah.
And I do think that I would say sometimes I would love a big money network or whatever, invest in a really top end mermaid mythology show, because, oh my God, the possibilities could be so marvelous now with the things our team anyway got to know. But so to have somebody communicate that stuff, and if you then have people who kind of know each other, I'm talking camera and actor, you could choreograph the most incredible things and work really smoothly together. And that's kind of then what evolved by season three, where we had, of course, it couldn't be long because of money, but the fight scenes that we did have, they were really brilliant. They were with actual weapons underwater.
Right. Yeah.
Everybody had spears and staffs. And I mean, we shot it in bits, obviously, but we actually choreographed things that were no longer scrapping things. Just trying to bite and fight each other. We actually...
taking swings at each
taking
other.
Taking swings.
Actually,
we came up with this, because by then as well, we were just sort of all very much water rats. So we came up with ways of like blocking, and I screwdriver twist, turn, swim this out of you, and then I attack you from the left, and then I tumble over you and pull you back. And like, we got really creative, and obviously... I think we were very enthusiastic. We all knew so much. The problem was a bit time. We couldn't make a very long war scene with many fights. And at the end of the day, I told you earlier, right? Like, the moment you get something that's remotely close to what you wanted, they say, cut, let's move on.
Right.
So, and in my dream, I was like, please let us give you more moves. Like, let's give us, you know, give you more
Let's
things.
Spend a whole day on this.
Yeah, but you know, you have to be, that's just production. That's just filming.
Yeah.
But by then it was amazing. We could actually have underwater fight choreography that isn't just scrap. I sort of hit and then the guys in CGI will put me together. It was really, really thought out. And
And how much were you informing the choreography? Like, were you kind of go like, oh, I can do this? Or were they just kind of like, well, let's do this?
So in the beginning, I was very much relying on everyone around me. And then obviously also because I was just new. And also, I think with other actors, towards season three, we were so at home in the water, we could really contribute. Like, there's a big fight at the end with my character and sort of the enemy. And that was, it was in reality, it was much longer and obviously got cut to like the bare essentials. But it was the choreographers of the stunt team came up with, I call it sort of like a skeleton thing. Like, okay, we go from point A to point B and then somehow, you know, she dies.
Like a rough draft.
Yeah. And then we try it out. And in that process, then we, and I had already thought of this move for ages, and she had thought of some moves she wanted to try. So by the end, it was really, they provided the skeleton, but we certainly had completely colored it in and fleshed it out and made it our own, because we were at home. And then, and we were a family by this point, the water team, because you have to, because you're basically, you know, risking your lives for one another.
Yeah.
So in a way,
totally.
so it was amazingly collaborative. And like I said, by the end, it was like we pitched in as much as any stunt person would pitch in. And it was amazing feeling. And then instance, for the mating sections, which was also tricky because you don't want to be too gross, but you kind of want to give this sense of it's another worldly experience than maybe what we know of.
Yeah.
And then that was really the coordinator team, because it had to do, I think, a little bit with that challenge, like how much do you show and how much is
implied
and all this stuff. But so we worked with a lot of wire pulling and trying, and this was really hard, it was trying to swim as one and be like, basically try to sort of form one being as we spiraled on this wire. I mean, working with wires is a whole other thing, because you're working with equalization that's kind of difficult because you're being pulled down fast.
Yeah. And you're you go through that change of depth and you've got to equalize. Yeah.
And you're in camera the whole time. So you have to try to either hide it or really, really equalize at the top. I was very, very fortunate. I'm kind of all right with equalizing, but even I found it's like one of the challenges with why sometimes, but like I said, we have an amazing team. So
yeah,
they always gave us the tricks. And but so yeah, it got better as it went on. And it's so hard to keep your breath hold when it's intense like that. But it's also let's be honest, it's also the part of the job that also gives the most satisfaction when we got the take and, you know, the tail whack was good in the face or, you know, like also, you know, another element is the bloody hair. Bloody hair that gets in the way. And they're like, yeah, Eileen, or I'm just saying me a lot, but, you know, I'm also referring to all the fantastic other moms that did phenomenal things. You know, you did a great take, but your hair's in your face. Can you whip it back or something? And then by the time you've like whipped it back and it's out of your fake tooth and whatever, your breath holds like a little bit less and you don't have enough left over to really go for it. So you have to come up and it's just a mission.
Was that something that you got better at, like in terms of being efficient with your time, like getting the hair out of the face? And did you work out kind of techniques to make that easier?
Certainly. I think, and I actually heard this in your podcast too, something about, so when, for instance, when you enter the water, already point your toes, you know, so the moment you enter the water, you are half there basically.
Yeah.
So that at any point you're ready. And it was the same with us. Begin that entry to the water.
Right.
Basically half ready.
Yeah.
I was absolutely not doing that at the beginning because you're so overwhelmed with new things. But slowly you learn to have this kind of, how am I quickest ready to make the most of my breath hold vibe? And for us, it was, so you duck dive down. And as you duck dive down, and because you have a monofin so you can whip your way down, you pull your hair back. So by the time you come up, your hair's back and you're just ready to shoot. And you can do your actions and your camera ready. Figure of speech, you know, and it's this, it was the same with, you know, your hands. You're basically, as you're prepping or as they're remotely saying camera rolling, you're already putting yourself in the shoulder, the arms,
the right
back, whatever. So I feel like you can compare it so much to being a dancer. Like you just got to do your prep before the dance begins a bit, like do your thing.
And so since you've got quite an ensemble of people there. What was the biggest kind of scenes that you did? How many people were in the water at one time?
I think our biggest challenge was we had sort of a war scene that was in season 3, and it was all of the main mums. And by that, I'm just going to kind of generalize and say the Bristol Cove clan, which is about 8 mums or something, and we all stand in group and turn around and then prepare for war, you know, have sort of a battle cry with the spears. And that seems fairly simple, but it's a really big challenge to get 8 people of different heights and everything to kind of, dare I say, statically turn around at the same time without losing your point of depth, you know, so that to not go a bit higher or sink a bit lower and remain in camera for that reaction, especially when you realize that each person actually kind of has a safety diver there. So you're really talking like 20, 30 people around you or in water, because they really, really, really keep us safe, especially scenes like that. So they used a scaffolding, luckily, for us to stand on. But even then, we're trying to get that motion of you swim, turn round, right? You don't just step.
Not like stand, turning.
So, and those kind of moments where we have to be in sync, really hard, because everyone has to be so, so aware of each other. Again, it's where you get real marvelous respect of those kinds of animals that live in schools, or you know, like schools of fish, or birds that fly as one and make formations and things like that. They really form some kind of one mind, which is again we as time went on, we got there. We also had a funeral for one of the characters, and we got there in the end. Like we sensed each other's ways. Like there's a point where I think my character got attacked or something, and then all the other mums rescue her. So they had to, in mid scene, so while it was already rolling, get a signal to swim down, come grab Rin and fight off the bad guy, whatever, and then pull them up. So that was huge coordination for like five people. Because if everyone's already underwater, that's one thing. But for people to swim down and come up into camera at the right point, it was mental. And they did it. They did it because they're awesome and they're my friends and I love them. But they did it because slowly you do tune into one another. Again, it's one of those brain clicks that I find kind of magical. But yeah, that was those things are always very challenging when it's like
but
more
it must
people.
Feel amazing when it all comes together. Like there must be, you know, you've nailed it.
That euphoric feeling of a day on tank when you've nailed the scenes that you could see the directors were sweating about for days beforehand. And, you know, we did it. It's like, oh, my God. It's hard work, but the rewards are also the biggest, I'd say, on tank days.
I think one of the rewards, too, must be knowing that your fans of the show, which I would say is a heavily mermaid community, will love this scene. Like they will get a kick out of this.
Yeah, I'm so grateful that it's found some fans and some people, people respond to it really well. And I, you know, we work so hard for ourselves, but also for anybody that will watch it and wants to be kind of, you know, we want people to be taken away by this world. And sometimes I wish they could see, because, you know, things get cut and things get edited for the sake of commercials and things like that. And then your heart breaks, like, because sometimes we do takes in one breath, like entire scenes in one breath. Yeah. And then artistically, of course, you've got to edit it together for, you know, whatever reason. And so sometimes I wish the mermaid fans could see all the beautiful work that these people do in the water. I'm not talking about me, but like everybody who does these amazing things. Like we had a girl that played my daughter who's like so like just a kid, and she was just a natural and doing these insane things. And but you know, you can always wish for more. In the end, you're right. I'm very, very grateful that one, we were able to do it, something so unique. I don't think that it happens on average as an actor to get all these experiences, all this training, the highs of that kind of, you know, underwater working. And then two, of course, that people, or at least some people have enjoyed it and liked it. That was the whole point. So that's, you know, that's something to be very grateful for.
Were you aware of such a huge mermaid community before you started this project?
Do you know, I wasn't actually. I only started to notice it when I got into it. And then I thought, is it because I'm more aware or is it really happening? And then slowly I realized, no, it's really happening. Like, because I saw, you know, mermaid schools popping up, which I'm sorry, but 10, 20 years ago, you know, when I was a teenager, 20 years ago, but you know what I mean? Like it wasn't really around. And now.
Would you have loved it if it was back then?
Oh my goodness. Yes. It would have been the first thing I would have signed up for.
Right.
I would have much preferred that than violin between you and me. I'd much rather go to mermaid class than violin class.
Absolutely.
If you could tell 9-year-olds me that. Yeah. I'm so chuffed for anybody who's a kid. If they've got that near them, that's just marvelous, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think that's great.
Oh, totally. No, I love it. I mean, I kind of, you know, I am part of that community because I shoot with a lot of these mermaids and a lot of these kind of talented people in that in that whole community. And I just love it. It's so inclusive. And so how does it feel knowing that you're now going to be a part of that for the rest of, you know, the rest of your life?
Oh, well, deeply honored, you know. Deeply grateful that I'm a slice of the mythology, a little drop in the mermaid world. You know, I'm very grateful I was able to give my two cents a bit Not my two cents, sorry, it's not my, but you know what I mean. I was able to give a little bit to,
Yeah, as a group, I mean, as a show, you know, I mean, we're talking to you right now, but we are including the whole cast.
Yeah, and also men and honorary people all around.
Yeah.
I also am obviously referring to all their beautiful work too.
Exactly, yeah. It's been so awesome having this chat with you.
You too. Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course.
Kindred spirits, eh?
Exactly. And what have you got coming up? Have you got any water projects in the work?
No, it's too grey for that here at the moment. Yeah. And then I'm hoping just, you know, as soon as I'm near any kind of big bodies of water, to keep improving on my skills and then also just keep having those experiences of bliss, you know, where you feel kind of freedom. I'd love to really, that COVID doesn't allow any kind of travel, but I would love to just go back to Vancouver and visit the people there and do some cool diving trips with Roberta and Braden. Last time they took me to like the kelp forest. I mean, that was just magical.
Oh, yeah. Kelp forests are amazing.
Oh my goodness. What a... just a fairy tale world. Yeah, something like that I would love to do when I'm next able to travel. That would be marvelous.
Yeah, I do feel like there's going to be a lot of pent up water energy in the world as soon as things open up, you know. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks so much and looking Cheers. Forward to seeing what happens next.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
Thanks for listening, everyone. And as always, if you like the podcast, please subscribe, review, and share. If you'd like to support the production of these episodes, you can purchase our very cool merchandise at theunderwaterpodcast.com. We've got branded coffee mugs, stickers, beer cozies, and posters featuring our amazing illustration and logo by Joe Hodenow. If you'd like to connect with us or learn more about our guests, you can reach us at theunderwaterpodcast.com or on Instagram. We also have a Facebook group where you can discuss the episodes and even get your questions answered by the guests. There's a link to it in the show notes. You can learn more about my underwater photography workshops and mentoring at brettstanley.com or Brett S. Photo on Instagram. The Underwater Podcast is presented and produced by me, Brett Stanley, and our music is Neo by Oh Boy. Keep creating, everyone. I'll see you in the water.